Hello everyone, thank you for being here. My name is Sanne Kuiper and I'm a PhD student at the University of Groningen in the Netherlands. My presentation today is about the theory of mind in children with autism spectrum disorder and in children with ADHD. It's part of a bigger project in which we also looked at language comprehension and language production in both groups of children, and we looked at executive functioning also in these children. However, today I'll focus on theory of mind and some of the executive functions. I suppose many of you have heard already of theory of mind, but I will very shortly explain something about that. Theory of mind is the ability to attribute thoughts, beliefs, emotions to oneself and to other people, and also to predict behavior on the basis of these beliefs. For example, if I know that you really love chocolate and I would give you the choice between chocolate pie, a chocolate cake and an apple pie, on the basis of that I know that you really love chocolate, I can predict that you probably would go for the chocolate cake. Although I would prefer the apple pie, since that's much bigger, so you have more. Many studies on theory of mind have focused on false belief. And false belief is the understanding that someone else has his or her own beliefs, and also that these beliefs can differ from reality, so someone can be wrong. I think one of the most famous false belief tasks is the Sally Ann task, in which Sally hides her ball in the basket and it's secretly moved by Ann. And at the end, the participants are asked, okay, where will she look for her ball? Well, if you have acquired the concept of false belief, you will say, okay, she will look in the basket, since that's where she left it, although it's not the correct place of the ball. You can distinguish false belief in first order, in which one other person is involved. For example, Pete thinks it's raining. I think today there will be a true belief, but hopefully in the rest of the week this will be a false belief. You can also have second order false belief, in which an extra person is involved. So you have Mary thinks that Pete thinks it's raining. Of course, you can also think of third-order false belief, fourth-order false belief, and go on. But even for typically developing adults, third-order is already really difficult, except maybe for people who watch lots of soap series, since then you really have third, fourth, and fifth order in those series. But normally, second-order is already rather difficult. Children who are typically developing acquire second-order false belief around the age of 6 or 7. In children with autism spectrum disorder, their problems in social interaction have been linked with their impairments in theory of mind. In ADHD, we also see often problems in social functioning. So the question could arise, is there also a theory of mind problem in this group? What do we know of theory of mind? Well, in children with autism spectrum disorder, they have often found problems in theory of mind and on false belief tasks. For children with ADHD, not that many studies have been done. Buitelaar et al. Found on second-order false belief, he found impairments in the ADHD group. However, it only were 9 children, since it was part of a bigger study. Other studies, Charman et al. And Dijk et al. In 2001, didn't find any theory of mind impairments in the ADHD group. So at this point, it's not very clear, do they have theory of mind problems or not. The main aims of our study was, well, do children with ADHD also have problems in theory of mind, on theory of mind tasks, but also which mechanisms may underlie theory of mind impairment in ASD and ADHD. You can imagine that successfully passing a false belief task not only requires theory of mind, but also executive functioning abilities, such as working memory, inhibition. For example, for working memory, one must simultaneously hold in mind the real state, for example, where is the ball for real, but also the beliefs of other people about where the ball would be. And particularly in second-order false belief, working memory may play an important role. The second executive function where we looked at in our study is inhibition. To successfully pass a false belief task, one should inhibit the real state of affair, where the ball really is, in favor to give the answer for the belief of someone else. And in addition, verbal ability may underlie theory of mind performance too. A significant relation between verbal ability and false belief tasks have been found in other studies. We tested children between 6 and 12 years old in our study, since that's the age in which typically developing children acquire second-order theory of mind. All children were verbal, and especially in the ASD group, that's a very important addition, since we didn't test any non-verbal ASD children, so it's only part of the whole spectrum. All children have been diagnosed by had clinical diagnosis of ASD or ADHD, and in our study, these diagnoses were confirmed by the ADOS and the ADI revised for ASD, and we used the parent interview for child symptoms to confirm the ADHD diagnosis. And children who didn't score above the cutoffs for the ADOS, ADI revised and PICS were excluded from the study. Well, we tested 46 children with ASD, 37 with ADHD, and 38 with typically development. We used two subtests of the VISC to get an estimated IQ score, and children with the control children scored higher on the subscales. The theory of mind tasks we used. We used two false belief tasks, and they were taken from the Hollebrandse study from 2008. We used the verbal false belief task, in which we tested first-order false belief and second-order false belief. And we also used a low-verbal false belief task, not entirely non-verbal, since those tasks are really hard, also for adults and for children more difficult. So it was less verbal than the verbal task, but still a bit verbal. I'll give you an example of the verbal task and of the low verbal false belief task in a moment. And also on the low verbal task, we had first and second order false belief. We used an N-back task, and we used 0-back, 1-back, and 2-back to test working memory. In a 1-back task, children had to remember if the picture they saw was the same as the picture just before. In the 2-back task, they had to remember if the picture was the same as two pictures before, and so on. For inhibition, we used a stop task in which children had to respond on stimuli and had to press one button if they saw a tree, another button if they saw a door. And in 1/3 of the cases, a red square would appear, and in those cases, they had to inhibit their response. We used the Peabody picture vocabulary task to get a measurement of verbal ability, since that standardized test was suitable for children from 6 to 12 years old. I'll give you an example of the verbal false belief task now. In this task, children were shown four pictures, and the experimenter was telling a short story. And we had eight of these stories. In this example, Sam and Maria are playing together, and Maria sees that there's a bake sale at the church. And she says, oh, I'm going to buy us some cookies. And Sam thinks that's a really good idea. At this point in the story, the first order belief of Sam is that his sister will buy cookies, and his sister thinks, Sam thinks she's going to buy cookies. So the second order belief is also cookies. When Maria has left, Mom comes home and Sam tells her that Maria will buy cookies for them. And Mom says, oh, they didn't have any cookies at the bake sales, but they had some apple pie. The apple pie again, I would go for that. And Sam thinks, oh, probably Maria will buy us some pie. At this moment, his belief, his first order belief, is Maria will buy apple pie, while Maria still thinks her brother will buy cookies. So the second order belief is different now from the first order belief. When Maria arrives at the bake sales, she says, okay, I want to buy some cookies. But the woman says, oh, I'm sorry, we don't have any cookies left, but we have some brownies. Maria buys some brownies then. At this moment, both beliefs are false, have become false. Since in reality she has bought some brownies, Sam thinks she will have bought apple pie, and Maria still thinks that Sam has bought cookies. To be very clear, the children didn't see the whole things below, so I make it some easier for you than for the children. At the end, Maria runs into the mailman and she tells him, okay, I bought some brownies for me and my brother, but Sam will be really surprised when he sees what I've bought. And then the mailman asks her, okay, what does Sam think you have bought? And then we ask the child, what will she say? Well, children who have acquired second order false belief will then give the second order answer. Children who only have acquired first order false belief will say apple pie, since that's what Sam thinks. And children who didn't acquire false belief will say brownies, because that's what she bought. Well, this is an example of the verbal false belief task. We also had the low verbal false belief task, in which children watched a short movie in which an object was moved from one place to another, and the person could or could not see it. So sometimes the screen was closed and sometimes the screen was open. Children watched four movies with one person present for first order false belief, and four movies with a second order person present. And exactly just like in the verbal false belief stories, there was a real location where the duck at the end was. There was a first order location that only the first order person knew about, and there was a second order location in which the woman knew or thought the girl would think the duck was. Over to the results. We first did a multiple multivariate regression analysis in which we put all the four conditions, so both verbal conditions and both low verbal conditions, as dependent variables, and we found that indeed both children with autism spectrum disorder and children with ADHD scored lower on the theory of mind tasks than the control children. We did some follow-up univariate analysis, and you can see them here. On both verbal tasks, both groups differed from the control group, so scored lower on both verbal conditions, and also on the low verbal first order. As you can see in the low verbal second order, the ADHD group scored on this task also lower than the controls. However, the autism spectrum disorder group scored comparable to the controls. And you can see that especially the controls scored much lower than on the other tasks. So the low verbal second order task seemed to be very hard also for control children. And probably control children really benefit from having more language, supportive language during theory of mind tasks. On average, we saw that children with ASD and children with ADHD showed impairments on the false belief tasks. The second aim of our study was which mechanisms may underlie these impairments on the task. And we looked if working memory inhibition and verbal ability mediated the relation between the presence of ASD or ADHD and impairments on the theory of mind tasks. I explain very shortly what mediation is. Well, what we found was correlations between the presence of ASD and impairment on theory of mind tasks, or the presence of ADHD and impairment on theory of mind tasks. It could be that there's a direct relation. However, it could also be that working memory inhibition or verbal ability mediates that relationship. So it's maybe not a direct relationship, but more like an indirect relationship. Well, we first added working memory to the regression model. And for children with ASD, we didn't find any mediation. So the found relation between ASD and theory of mind impairment remained significant. However, for children with ADHD, when we added working memory to the regression model, the direct relationship became insignificant. And we saw for all the four subtests that working memory significantly mediated that relationship. So working memory mediated the relation between having ADHD and having impairments on theory of mind tasks, while there was no mediation in the ASD group. For inhibition, we didn't find any mediation for neither groups. So the direct relationships remain significant even when we included inhibition to the regression model. For verbal ability, we found similar results as for working memory. There was no mediation for the ASD group, and we found significant mediation on all four subtests for the ADHD group. So verbal ability mediated the relation between ADHD and theory of mind, but no mediation in the ASD group. The conclusions of our study are that both children with ASD and children with ADHD showed impaired performance on false belief tasks. So they really look like their performance was alike, only except on the second order low verbal task. However, for children with ADHD, working memory and verbal ability mediated the relation between ADHD and theory of mind performance, while for the children with ASD, no mediation was found. So they seem more like a core theory of mind problem, at least not mediated by working memory, inhibition, and verbal ability as we measured with our tasks. The clinical implications for our study. Well, we found that social problems have been linked for the ASD group with theory of mind problems. We also see theory of mind problems, theory of mind performance problems on the tasks for children with ADHD. But it might be that also there are social problems, that different mechanisms are underlying their social problems. So although they show the same behavior sometimes, it may be that there are different mechanisms underlying. And therefore, also, different treatments may be needed to help them with their social functioning problems for ADHD than for ASD. Okay, I'd like to thank all parents and children who participated in the study and NWO for the grant. Thank you.
There's a lot of space for questions, so if there are any questions, please ask them. Um, I actually do have a question. Given the former talk, I was wondering, in your ASD group, are there any children with ADHD, or were they excluded, and what about the other way around?
There were some children in the ASD group who indeed scored high on the PICs, on the ADHD interview. However, we didn't look at their performance separately from the ADHD with some ASD problems or not. So that might be a really good thing to see, are they behaving differently on the theory of mind performance. So that might be a good idea to see if they behave differently on the theory of mind tasks. If I understood correctly, you asked if the mediation was complete, so if the direct relationship disappeared when we included working memory or verbal ability. The significant relation disappeared, so there still was a relationship. It wasn't that the correlation became zero, but it wasn't significant anymore. So I think that's then... I don't know if you name it fully mediation then. Okay.
Other questions? I actually found it very hard myself to have use of my working memory during your theory of mind explanation. So I'm curious, I think with all people, you use a lot of working memory when you do a theory of mind task. But I was wondering, what was the specific reason why you included the low verbal and the high verbal task? Were there specific hypotheses about that?
Yeah, we included both tasks since we also looked within our bigger study to, we looked at language comprehension and language production. And since we wanted to know also about theory of mind, how important that is for the language production and language comprehension in these children, we also included more low verbal theory of mind task to split a bit like the verbal theory of mind task, because that's interacting with the language production and comprehension tasks we do. We prefer to have non-verbal theory of mind task, but in the pre-test we saw that that was much too difficult for even the older, typically developing children. So that's why it was a low verbal instead of a non-verbal. We included both tasks for the language production and comprehension tasks.
I wondered whether the ADHD group was treated and whether they were taking medication and whether they took it during the tasks and whether you saw taking methylphenidate or something else, their working memory got better and by that also their theory of mind.
Yes. Yeah. The children who participated in our study didn't use any medication during the day of testing. I think it would be really good to, in future studies, to take a group of treated or medicational with medication ADHD children and not. We have chosen to only include children who didn't get any medication on the moment of testing to really get the ADHD symptoms to, with them, so we could really see what the ADHD itself has influenced.
questions?
We still have time left.
Yeah, we have time left. You can tell some jokes.
Your ASD group, they also met criteria for ADHD, if I understood. So have you thought about including a group of ASD kids who don't have ADHD criteria, though I know from the first talk that doesn't exist, but I think you probably could find some. Have you thought of that?
We didn't include only children with ASD who also had ADHD. Most of the children were only... Yeah, and that's also, of course, in the DSM-4 when they are diagnosed with ASD. ADHD isn't officially diagnosed anymore. There were, I think, by heart, about 1/4 of the group that also scored above the cutoff scores on the parent interview for child symptoms. But there were also most of the group didn't score high on the ADHD. Symptoms.
Did you still change when you exclude those?
I didn't do that yet. Yes.
I asked
Okay, you asked if the result changed if we excluded the children with ASD who also had ADHD above the cutoff score on the PICS. We didn't do that, and I added yet. Because that would be really interesting to see if there are really two different groups.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you give an explanation for the different performances of your ADHD group and your ASD group for the, if I remember correctly, the non-verbal second order false belief task?
Yeah, the second order non-verbal task, the ADHD group scored lower than the typically developing children, as we expected. But unexpected, the ASD group scored comparably low. We saw that typically developing children scored really low, around the 45% on the second order low verbal task. I think that it might not be that the children with ASD scored really good on that task, but that it's the case that the control children really score bad at the task. And one explanation could be that children, typically developing children, really profit from language to understand and to help them going through the story, but also helping them in false belief in the false belief task, like, okay, he is thinking that, and that for them language is much more important to get them through a false belief task, so they profit more from language than do children with ASD. But that's a hypothesis. We should see if we can test that.
There's room left for more questions even.
As long as there's time. I'm intrigued by the idea of mechanisms behind the same behavior. So I'll give you an example clinically, and I'm wondering your thoughts. We know that both populations, ADHD and ASD, have social problems. But the mechanisms could be different. So just clinically, I think of an ADHD child that's just barreling into social situations and driving everybody crazy. I think of an ASD child as not knowing what to do. Yet on a questionnaire, both could get rated as having social problems, but the mechanism, if you observe it, is similar. Similarly with aggression, a child could be aggressive due to anxiety, due to impulsivity, due to being irritable, and you still get a high rating on aggression. So I'm intrigued by the mechanism piece and wonder if you have some more thoughts about it.
Yeah, I think much behavior could be, much of the same behavior could be explained by different mechanisms in those two groups. For example, also that's also where we look at within our bigger study on the language comprehension and taking into account the other's perspective while talking or while comprehending. When a child isn't listening to the other story and wants to tell his story, it could be that he's just not interested in the other story, or that he has just such a great story it himself and he wanted to tell that first. And the same behavior is that you are interrupted and the child doesn't respond on your story. So, but it could be that it's two different mechanisms underlying for both groups. Still time left?
No, we can move on. Thanks a lot, and also thanks a lot for all the questions.
Okay. Thank you.